All lines are now bridged.
Great, thank you, and good morning, everybody. I'm Mike Berry. I'm with ONC, and I'd like to welcome you once again to the US CDI Task Force, and we really appreciate your time today and for helping us out with this task force. I'm going to open today's meeting with roll call, and I'll start with our co-chairs. Stephen Lane.
I am here.
Leslie Kelly Hall.
I'm here, thank you.
Ricky Bloomfield.
Good morning, I'm here.
Hans Butendijk.
Present.
Grace Cordovano.
Good morning.
Jim Gerges. Ken Kawamoto.
Morning.
John Kilbourne.
Here.
Les Leonard. Glenn McDonald. Aaron Meary. Brett Oliver.
Good morning, here.
Mark Savage.
Good morning.
Michelle Schreiber.
Good morning. I'm here, but as I shared with some of you, I will not be on for long, so thank you.
Masha Termott.
Good morning.
Andy Truscott.
Present.
Cheryl Turney.
Morning.
Dan Breeman.
Good morning.
And Denise Webb.
Good morning.
Good morning, everybody, and thank you again for joining us. I'll now turn it over to our co-chairs. Stephen, Leslie, take it away.
Thank you so much, Mike, for kicking off. I'm having some connectivity issues. I'm not sort of seeing real time the Adobe Connect that's coming in and out, so I apologize for that. We'll probably need to lean on Leslie somewhat more than usual. I'm looking at our slide four. I'm looking at our meeting agenda. and I do want to remind people that we are continuing to post our past meeting notes as soon as we are able. I think that the team has the meeting notes from last week to post, but they weren't there this morning when I went and looked for them, though the notes from the week before are posted on the website. Hopefully we can get to the point where we have those up in time for the subsequent meeting for those who will want to review them. That we wanted to review a little bit, take a moment to catch our breath and talk about the work that we did in phase one. I believe that the entire task force has been sent the report that we worked on. Leslie and Al and I worked pretty hard for a few days to pull together the report with all of our recommendations. It's relatively brief. We decided not to go into excruciating detail, but I think it captures the tenor of what we have been talking about for the past couple of months. And I hope that you've all had a chance to review that. We will be presenting that this Thursday to the HITAC and seeking their input to inform our work on the next phase as we move forward. Leslie, did you want to comment on that and the process of pulling that together?
Well, I think it was a really great effort. We did keep it brief. I think in our presentations we will. We'd love to hear from you today as we go through our work. Comments that might amplify the messages that we have here and make sure that we are on track so that we're good. And I see Les Leonard has his hand up, but I'm not sure if that's to say he's here, which I see in the chat, or it's something else.
I was just saying I was here.
We're glad to have you, Les.
Thank you.
All right. And I was curious, Al, did you want to provide any perspective on the work that we did pulling together the report? Because, I just think it's important insofar as we are representing, the input and the efforts of the task force. And we want to be sure that we've got that right. We did get some feedback from some task force members, who I think were perhaps disappointed that we didn't get to discussing some items, that there might have been some other items that we would have suggested for inclusion in version two. I mean, I think realistically, we're asking for a pretty substantial expansion over, you know, what was put out in draft V2. So I think that that's worth acknowledging, you know, that we have indeed covered a lot of territory and made a lot of, I think, meaningful suggestions. I think at a high level, we did specifically take to heart a lot of the input that we received from CMS, and obviously we spent a lot of time going back and forth about that, and considering what we should include. We captured the rich discussion that we had here regarding whether or not items that are at that intersection of CDA and Fire US Core should be included. And then I think we also had the social determinants of health, which I think probably is going to be the most significant aspect of the work that we've done to date. I don't think it comes as a surprise, given the perspective of the folks on the task force, and that was intentional. And I think when I listen to discussions, you know, that Mickey's comments Mickey's been making in the public domain and others, I think the fact that we did include a recommendation to advance the SDOH items that are at level two into version two, I think is very significant in terms of the work that we've done. And then I think the other really significant point is the suggestion that we have that ONC or the HITACH, I don't think we're quite clear in our suggestion, work with explicitly with HL7 to request that they prioritize work on the implementation guides that will support the data classes and elements that we have suggested. So I think those were kind of the highlights that we captured right up front in our report. And then we had, you know, we made a point of kind of cataloging our task 1A, 1B, and 1C recommendations. So again, go ahead, Les.
I would just also add that we are asking for their input on stakeholder priorities, because that seems to be an important guiding principle as we go forward. So that is a specific ask of the group, as well as to consider and hopefully approve our recommendations.
So really interested in any observations, input, suggestions from the task force as Leslie and I prepare to go and present your work to the HITACH later this week. Quiet group. I guess we'll take that to mean we did a decent job capturing your thoughts, and we'll obviously all of you who are not already members of HITACH are more than welcome to attend the meeting and to listen to the discussion. I think that would be delightful if we had some of you there, and those of you there's just like we have here at HITACH, there is an opportunity for public comment. I think we tend to do public comment. I'm trying to remember, Al or Mike, will we be doing public comment at the end of the USCDI presentation, or will it be only at the end of the meeting as a whole?
It is only at the end of the meeting as a whole. It's scheduled to be about 2:15 Eastern time on Thursday.
Okay. So again, if any of you want to, have any sort of support or dissenting opinions or added color you'd like to bring to the HITACH considerations, I think it's important to realize that our recommendations go to the HITACH. The HITACH then determines which and whether they will then put their imprimatur on them and make them as a recommendation to the national coordinator. And then, and only then, will they be taken into consideration as the ONC goes through their next cycle of work, deciding on the final version 2 to be published later this year. Mark, I see that you're...
Yes, so I did take a look at the presentation and the report on the HITECH meeting agenda. I didn't see a separate email to the task force, but I did look at them on the healthit.gov website. And just thank you to Leslie and to Stephen and to all the ONC staff that worked on that, because it is hard work to synthesize and to get it into a form that can carry the day in front of a meeting of a lot of people, a virtual meeting at that. So just big appreciations. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
Stephen, this is Denise. I'm not online. And I just wanted to tell the task force, too, that it is our intention to try to have a vote at the meeting. So while this is our recommendation to the HITECH, we hope to vote to recommend to forward it from the HITECH to Nikki, to the Office of the National Coordinator.
Yeah, we have a most favored nation status here, I think, at our task force, having both of the HITECH co-chairs members. I did have the opportunity to meet with them and the ONC team last week just to go over our recommendations at a high level, and so I think we're well prepared for our presentation. Thanks, Denise. Great.
You're welcome.
Why don't you pop up to slide 4? I think I'm with us now. Good, thank you. So again, this has been the focus of our work to date in phase 1. And I think we met our deadline, I'm very happy to say. We don't have a slide where the focus has changed to 2 and 3, so we'll just use this slide to say that our phase 2 work, just as a reminder, is due to complete by the early September. So we've got the second half of April, May, June, July, August to get through that. Typically, the federal task forces take a little bit of a hiatus over the summer. So thus far, you should have invites on your calendar through the end of May. So we've put 5 more meetings out on the calendar. I really don't know how long this is going to take us. You know, we may get through this work in 3 or 4 meetings. You know, it may take us 10 or 12. I really don't know. But the next cycle of work, and I just want to go through this, and I'll read through the light gray, is to evaluate the USCDI expansion process and provide HITECH with recommendations for potential improvements in the on-deck submission system, potential changes to the evaluation criteria and process used to assign levels to submitted data classes and elements, and then the prioritization process used to select new data classes and elements for the next draft version. So there's really kind of 3 steps to the process that ONC has put together. One is the submissions, you know, what information, what data we request from the requestors to submit to support their submission. All of you who've been spending time on the USCDI website and reading the submissions, you can see it's fairly detailed what they ask for. Mark and I and others have had a chance to actually make submissions, so you can kind of get a feel for how that goes. I was thinking, Al, it would be nice if we had a slide or a couple of slides that sort of just lists out the various questions on deck, because I don't think there's like a test system, or maybe there is, where we could sort of show people what the questions are. But I think that, you know, if we had, you know, questions, concerns, suggestions about any of the existing questions, I think that would be fair game for people to consider making the suggestions. Similarly, I think if there are questions. Sorry, Al, go ahead.
No, sorry, I bumped my mic. What we have right now is the prep sheet, which is definitely a detailed line by line question. We have a summary table of those questions and the criteria, the main criteria, and then the prioritization criteria as well. We can do any or all of those things.
That's great. Thank you. I had forgotten about the prep sheet, and I'm pretty sure it's posted, right? There's a link. I was just going real quick to find.
It is.
Here
it's
we
on
go.
The back page.
Yep, I found. Yeah, it's right on the front page. So if you go to get back here, I'm going to put it in the public chat here. If you go to the OnDeck site and you pull up that front page, you can open up the prep sheet and review that. And again, that is the question. So I think, again, our task 2A is really for all of you to look at those questions and to think about any opportunities that we may have to improve upon those. Would you agree, Al?
Sure, absolutely. With 2A, we're talking more about the technical usability of the system itself, and 2B is the criteria that are laid out in the system. So I just wanted to make sure that we're looking for technical input as well.
Yeah, I think that I would say that 2B is really more about what you guys do after they're submitted. So I would posit that the questions themselves we should consider as part of 2A. Just probably a niggly point, but I think that the questions in the prep sheet we should think of as part of 2A. 2B is what you guys do with this input when you're making the determination about what level to stick a submission at.
Yes, and we want to make sure that the criteria we use to assign a level is the same information that's requested in the OnDeck system. So those two are connected, have to be aligned very well. So I think handling the questions, the set of questions in the OnDeck is fine to handle under 2A. But we also want there are some technical issues or questions or concerns that could be addressed as well. They don't have to be necessarily addressed through the task force. They can be handled directly through communication with ONC, the technical stuff. But the qualities of the questions certainly is fair game for 2A.
And one other thing that I'd like to find out where it fits, Al, is the definitions that are there seem to be clear about what's a comment level and such, level one, level two. But things evolve so quickly that something that might have been a level two when it was originally submitted or reviewed, or level one is now a level two, or it's ready for prime time. And so the process we use to actually go back and make sure that those classifications are still valid it needs to be somewhere here, and I'm love your advice on that.
So the going back and evaluating where things landed certainly could be part of this. We have it as part of the process of communication between ONC and the submitter itself directly, I can certainly demonstrate how that system works, because if you were not a submitter, you don't know that sometimes there's some back and forth, whether it happens through the system itself or through external communications. Meetings with ONC has happened before, so those are some things where we can
for lack of a better term, negotiate where things land, or even change it, because sometimes not enough information is provided or we're misreading the information. So I think that whether probably that's more of a 2B, because we can reassign levels, we can change levels based on the criteria and our understanding of them.
Yeah.
I think that's an important review. Thank you.
I think you make a really important point, Al, that there is a human process that goes on here. As a submitter, there was a lot of back and forth, in emails and even on the phone about my submissions. And, I can only imagine, given the huge quantity of submissions that you guys received, how much effort that took as you guys did the determination of the levels, sought additional input, from the submitter beyond what they put in on the site. So I think we should all be aware that it was really it played out as a very, I think, conscientious and engaged process. And Mark, I don't know if you or anyone else on the task force who actually submitted items want to reflect on how that went for you as a submitter.
Thanks, Stephen. I'll say, yes, it was an interactive process, and I further appreciated the interactions that were happening outside of business hours, especially as deadlines were coming, the attempt to make sure that things got through on time. So big kudos to a lot of people at the ONC staff that were trying to facilitate the public contributions. I think there probably are some lessons learned about sources of confusion. Don't need to take time on today's call, but, and in fact, ONC may already have some ideas themselves about things to do. It was a great effort, and I just want to say thank you.
Great. So Al, I know I got the request to you kind of late, but I was hoping you'd be able to bring up a slide or two, or at least speak to both the leveling criteria that ONC used, as well as the prioritization criteria in determining which items that were level two were brought forward into the draft. Because again, we're going to be informing that process here. And I think it's important that we try to understand what the baseline is that we're trying to inform.
Sure. Let me pull this up. Can everybody see the evaluation criteria?
Yeah, not quite. I think you have to expand it. There you go. Perfect.
These are slides that were presented at the ONT annual meeting. And this first one reflects the primary criteria for evaluating each submission based on the data that was the information that was provided in the submission. So the four major points of this are the maturity of the standards used to represent the data elements that are being submitted for addition. What we're looking for is data elements that are more mature, well represented using the technical standards. Already be cited in the submission for reference to a particular value set or just a particular vocabulary standard, or the data element is referenced in one of the technical specifications, such as FHIR. Not necessarily US Core, but FHIR IG or the CCDA templates. The next one is the maturity or the currency of use of the data elements. Are these already being used using those standards in production systems, or is it only based on pilots? So this is extent of current use of these data elements, whether they're being exchanged or not. The next is the availability of exchange of these data elements. Is it being exchanged? Are they already being exchanged widespread between organizations, and in particular using different EHR systems? So rather than everybody on one particular EHR, platform, being able to share it is not the same as being able to exchange the data between multiple different organizations and multiple different EHR system types. And then the final one is this seems a little bit more objective, subjective, and it is to an extent. The breadth of applicability to stakeholders. So do these new data elements or proposed data elements affect or would commonly be used by a significant number of patients or providers or exchange transactions? And that's we couldn't really put a number because it's almost impossible to measure what percentage of the population is going to be affected by a particular data element. But we tried to look at breadth of applicability, and the reason for that is if we put this into US CDI version 2 or version next, that means everybody who has an EHR that's updated to the US CDI version next is going to have to at least be able to capture the information in those systems and be able to exchange it if it's available. It doesn't require every data element be captured every time, every patient encounter, but it needs at least the capability to do so. These are the primary criteria for giving the submissions a particular level. And it's from the level 2 group of data elements that ONC deliberates on what should be included in the next version or the next draft, the draft of the next version of US CDI. And I can go on to the next one, Stephen, if you want. The prioritization.
Hans has a question before you go on now.
Oh, I can't see it.
Quick question, Al. Is that on the statement that it's level 2 first row must be representing use of terminal standard or element of SDO balloted? SDO balloted, does that mean that it has gone through a ballot round or that it's published?
That we may need to clarify that as to whether or not I probably don't know the difference between balloted and published, and I should. But we want the data element to be able to be, we want to reference a usable technical specification, and if that means balloted or if it means published, maybe that's a point that we need to clarify.
It just would be helpful because published means it's actually out there. Balloted might have gone through one round, but it's not finished.
Yeah. So probably it's probably more accurate to say published because it could be in early balloting. It could be in later balloting. You're right. That's a good point.
Although there can be deviations from what's balloted to what's published to what's balloted. I'm not sure that you'd necessarily want to hang your hat on something which is still under change.
This sounds like this would be a good thing to focus on. Is how best to define that? Is that the right criteria for a level 2?
And Mark has a question as well.
Thank you. I wanted to reflect on an experience I had so many years ago with the Advanced Health Models and Meaningful Use work group, where we were tasked with looking at the use cases in the interoperability roadmap and trying to prioritize those use cases. It was a very interesting process. We did include criteria like this, but we then sort of went through and weighted across the criteria. So instead of what I'm seeing here of saying each criteria must be at level 2, it was possible to have something that was extremely high in terms of need and maybe almost at the maturity level, but maybe not quite. And when you multiplied all of that out, the really high need by the slightly less maturity, you might get something that was weighted at the same level as something, say, that went through all of these things at level 2. Not to argue that point today, but rather to lift that up as a
as something for that I think will probably be worth thinking about at the appropriate time in a future conversation.
Yeah, I remember that, Mark, because we wanted to have flexibility in high need areas to actually have regulation or standards push that need versus wait for that maturity. So it was a way to adjust for innovation, and it worked.
Correct.
Al, did you want to cover more here?
I wanted to just reflect back on Mark's comment and to ask if the question is it right, or is it the intent that one of these criteria, if it's significantly different than the other criteria as far as maturity goes or level, would that lower level sort of knock down a data element into a lower level? So highly mature standard, highly implemented in specifications, in broad use, but is highly specialized and only impacts a small percentage of patients or care situations. Is that sort of the question, Mark?
That would be an example of what we considered. So there were numerous different criteria, and I'm happy to share the blank spreadsheet if anybody wants to look at it to frame a conversation. But there were, for example, there was a set of criteria for which stakeholder groups were impacted by the particular use case, so that we were conscientious about making sure that we were benefiting a broad number of people, or if it was not, to have a way of adding that into the waiting process. So what you're talking about, Al, is one example. But another example would be, how important is this to meeting the national quality strategy, and the different domains of the national quality strategy? How much is it important to meeting interoperability? So we actually had quite a range, and I thought it was insightful. It certainly got us a lot of information and discussion about what to prioritize.
Yeah, if you could share that, Mark,
happy to.
Or you could just forward it. I think that would be helpful. I mean, I think many of us have been involved in, you know, similar prioritization processes and putting together schema. I mean, at my organization, we've done that repeatedly for just how to deal with requests for EHR, you know, changes or enhancements. And I think having that list of what are the important criteria, you know, is certainly something that we could be, that we could work on here during our phase two efforts.
Great. So I'll send it to Stephen and Leslie for you to distribute as you see fit.
Thank you. Mark.
Well, I'd just like to bring up again what Tim Kawamoto had brought up many times, is that, you know, if we set the threshold that we're going to require it if everybody's doing it, that doesn't make much progress. I mean, you know, then there's nothing changes if everybody's doing it. Plus, looking at history, that won't work. You know, Medicare would have never had everything so well standardized if they waited till everybody used it. They just told them to use it. You know, so I'm not saying that we want to be an enforcement demon, but I think we've got to be aware that, and then one other criteria that may not have been in the package, I think we should prioritize the stuff that's already produced by machines, and the work is really involved in standardizing it, and won't require extra labor by clinical people, because that's, you know, there's some stuff we'd like to have, but when you get 10 minutes per patient, it may not be feasible. So at least keep in mind, there's a lot of stuff that we've talked about it, and I think we've agreed some of it's going to come, like EKGs and spirometries, but the stuff just sitting there waiting to be sent might need a little tweaking and standardization, but you're not going to have extra labor because it's machines can send it.
That's a really good point, Clem. All right.
I think that, so
can I just respond or comment on Clem's comment? Clem, I understand what you're saying about sort of favoring, so it's a balance between, you know, what's already in use and what could be in use, or what's already in, you know, broadly used. So that, I think, could, that really informs, that argument informs the prioritization level, because things that are well standardized in broad use will be fairly easy to implement in the US CDI. And so I think that point is well taken with respect to the prioritization levels, which I think we'll cover in a minute.
So any other questions about the submission evaluation criteria? This is to say the criteria that were used to determine the level.
Stephen, do you want to address Viet's question? I know Kelly had responded, Leslie had responded to it about the comments that are coming in on existing submissions and how they are public.
I sort of see that as even further on down the line. So I wanted to kind of orient us in a time sequence. So first there's the what do we ask of the submitter? And that's the prep sheet and the questions. Then there's how does ONC, set these to a given level? Then there is how does ONC select amongst the level twos to put into a draft version X? And then I think Viet Nguyen, thank you for joining us. And I think Viet's going to be offering us some verbal public comments later. I think then there's the question of how does ONC take all the feedback, all of the public comment that comes in on the website, the feedback from HITACH that we're contributing to, and other feedback that they just get in the public sphere. How does ONC take all of that in their determination of the final version of the next version? And frankly, while our focus is on informing the next cycle for version 3, truly this cycle, ONC is about to go through a process of reviewing all of the public comments and all the HITACH comments. And I think Viet's point is well taken. How are you approaching that, Al? But I don't know if you want to jump to that or if you want to talk about the criteria that were used for prioritization as opposed to leveling. If you're talking, Al, we're not hearing you.
That's because I'm on mute again. So I think that sequence, doing the prioritization and then talking about how to adjudicate public comments, is fine. I do want to make sure that I address it, that we address it in this. But we can move on to prioritization next if you like.
Yeah, why don't we do that? We'll go in order.
So this
you
is
go
a,
ahead? Okay, perfect. Thanks.
This is a summary of the prioritization criteria that we used in USCDI to create the draft USCDI version 2. So from the level 2 data elements, so from the 109 data elements that we evaluated and found to be level 2, we evaluated them based on the existing gaps in USCDI version 1 concepts. And I think most anybody who looks at USCDI from a distance can see where there are gaps. There is not provider information. There is not encounter information. The diagnostic imaging as a data class was, I personally found glaring. The lack of diagnostic imaging data class and data elements. So the gaps of the submissions, which of them represented significant gaps in USCDI, we gave some weight to submissions about data elements that were already included. This is a little bit toward Clem's comment about were they already in use in some way? And so EHRs that were able to, that were certified to certain ONC criteria were already able to capture and exchange some data elements that were submitted in USCI, submitted for version two. And so we gave some consideration to that. We actually, ONC actually went through some of the exchange criteria, the transitions of care criteria in particular, because there were several data elements that were required for that criteria that were not part of USCDI version version one, and some of those were added because of this reflects a reduced burden of implementation or integration in the USCDI version two. We also looked at the amount of technical standards development, and this particularly gets to what Hans and I think it was Ricky that was doing to evaluate the U.S. Core and the CCDA templates, things that were already well represented in those standards or in those IGs would require a lot less development or change in those standards or those IGs, and so those were also considered. And then overall, we were looking for, there's every change that we make to USCDI that gets adopted is going to have an impact on health IT development, whether it's small or large. Every change that we make is going to, where vendors are going to adopt the next version of USCDI is going to have an impact on them. And that impact will also be passed down to the implementing providers and systems and hospitals that implement these updated versions. And so we took that into consideration, given the fact that there is, I think it's an understatement to say that the burden on the system, the entire healthcare system, not just the health IT system, to do everything necessary to respond to the pandemic, as the USCDI version one was coming out, had a major impact on our decision as to how many new data elements ONC would add to add USCDI. And so we look at sort of the aggregate lift, and that significance of aggregate lift to developers and implementers could change, and the yardstick that we use to measure that aggregate lift may change or may need to be tweaked. But those are the things that we considered, and as a result is why this, all of these things combined was how we ended up with a small percentage of the overall submissions, the level two submissions. Over.
Yeah, any questions for Al about that process? Does this give anybody heartburn? Anyone feel that there are some glaring, things that are missing from this?
Stephen, this is Hans.
Go ahead, Hans.
Not anything that's glaring, and this has been clear for USCDI version 2, but I think in the way that we ended up making recommendations, that we clearly in a couple of areas went beyond where we are with published standards. So I think more for a lesson learned looking forward is that how can we get more early indication, and I'm looking forward to task number 3 in a way, is that how can we get already a much bigger lead time so that by the time a USCDI version X is going to be discussed, that we have already more of the technical standards that are in play, that they are there. So how can we provide in the process more lead time for the community to say these 3 things are important in the next round, so that by the time we get to discussing getting it into the next version of UCDI, that standards development is much closer than what we have seen in a couple of areas. So that's more of a lesson learned, or how can we apply that lesson learned to make it work with these kinds of prioritization criteria.
Hans, I think I want to address that because it's something else that it came up fairly early. One of the reasons that we didn't publish these criteria, these prioritization criteria, until around the same time as we published the draft V2. Part of it was we were still working on what the priorities would be, and those were actually developing at a pace in the fall of last year, what things that we could and couldn't, get through. Our intent is to publish a new version of these priorities. They could be the same, they could be different. They probably will be adjusted, but to publish these prioritization criteria around the same time as we publish version 2, which will be about 2 or 3 months before the end of the version 3 submission period, if that helps.
So that revision, we have an opportunity to inform through our discussion here in the task. Dan, I see your hand up.
I think this is probably a placeholder for a different conversation, but I wanted to mention in this prioritization list, talking about, say modest standards development and so forth. And, USCDI as it currently stands really points to terminology standards, which don't exist in a vacuum per se, right? They exist in a concert with the exchange standards, whether that's CDA and FHIR. And yet in this process, we sort of, we both refer to them, but then don't actually talk about that interplay, how they work, meaning there might be vocabulary, but it's not actually used in the exchange and sort of vice versa, right? There might be exchange, but actually no vocabulary bound to it. So I do feel like there's probably some future discussion around how we both reflect the sort of current state of those two different pieces, the vocabulary and the exchange standards.
And that would be fair to include in our task to be as we look at new process, correct, Stephen?
I think that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, Stephen, one thing that you brought up sometime last week, I think, was given the fact that ONC is going to publish the prioritization criteria fairly early, much earlier in the cycle than they did last time, and the prioritization criteria is part of task 3, and clearly the task force and the HITACH probably would want to have some usable information to pass along to ONC. One of the things that the task force could consider is doing them out of turn, focusing on, or at least spending some time on the prioritization criteria, and possibly delivering them early to inform our presentation of
priorities. It's a really good point, Al, just because that is the order in which things could have an impact. I guess my question is, do we, and maybe Denise, you have some insight into this, do we have another opportunity to get before HITACH prior to September? Because certainly one thing we could do, as you say, is try to front load that, inform the republication of the prioritization criteria. But I think waiting till our presentation, our phase two presentation in September is going to be too late, right?
So, Stephen, the schedule right now is we have a meeting in June and July, and then we take the summer break, and there's no meeting in August. And then September is our next meeting. So what I hear you saying is it would probably be helpful if we had an August meeting.
Well, or if we focus on our task 3 in time to present in July.
Yeah, that might be it. That might be an option. I mean, we certainly can work with ONC to to have this on the agenda for July.
That would help us to set some foundation. I think it would be really important.
Clem,
yeah,
your hand
so I, you know, we...
Sorry, go ahead, Denise.
No, I was just going to say for you and Leslie, we can certainly work with Michael and see what we can do in terms of the agenda.
Clem has a comment too. Clem?
I think he's saying to us, actually.
Well, I just wanted to be sure that this later discussion, recent discussion, didn't stop what we decided earlier, what is going into the current draft. And all those things we talked about, they're still there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. We've got our phase. That's going to culminate in our recommendations to HITECH on Thursday and hopefully their vote to forward those to the national coordinator. We're now talking really about phase two work and how we form the next cycle.
Right. Okay. And could we get that report? Because we might want to review it to see what we think needs to get added in the next cycle.
You've got it, Clem. You received part of the HITECH materials, and as Mark pointed out to the public.
Shame on me. I'm still not caught up with all my emails.
It's all good. We're all in this together. All right. So I don't know whether we can even perhaps make a decision at this point. So really what Al has pointed out to us is a potential opportunity to work on task three before task two, because we would have an opportunity to inform the priorities, the prioritization criteria that we're looking at here in time for the V3 submission cycle, before the V3 submission cycle is complete, since it's already open. There are already some new recommendations coming in through OnDeck. And I think that makes sense. And perhaps, you know, if we make a decision about that, we can make a comment about that to HITECH this week, just to be sure that nobody there has any concerns about that approach. And then, as Denise was saying, potentially we could come back to HITECH with a brief presentation in July with those recommendations in time for the ONC team to incorporate those in their published revision. So does anybody feel strongly one way or the other about that as a proposal?
I'm for it, Clem.
Okay. Number of thumbs up, Juan?
I have strongly, if I can have three thumbs up, I would do it. It's going to be very helpful to get an idea. Okay, Mark, you got me beat. But yeah, I think it's very important to get that outlined, so to increase the timeline between having an idea and having the guidance in place. There's very limited time this time around.
Okay, well, hearing no objections, I think we will make that request of the HITECH on Thursday. And focus, you know, do our early focus over this next month or so on these priorities. Again, I don't know how long this is going to take us, but we'll see. It is, maybe Al, we can be prepared to kind of drill through some of these because, you know, the notion of significant gaps. You know, what is a significant gap? You know, who defines that? Supported by ONC certification, I think we understand what that means, but we certainly have a couple of vendors here who know in detail what that means, you know, to keep their applications certified and what that has taken in practice. What does modest mean when it comes to standards development or the perception of the aggregate lift. I think we should kind of plan to go through this in a little bit deeper dive next time we meet, if in fact we get the thumbs up from HITECH to focus on this first.
And I think that's a good place we could incorporate the suggestions from the sheet that Mark is sending us from our history of use and in meaningful use. It did help. So at least we can start planting those seeds to say there are varying degrees of all of these things, and need can trump, or stakeholders can trump many things based on our recommendations. Yeah.
So I think while it's appropriate for us to focus in on this task three set of questions, I also do want task force members to be planning ahead for our work on task two. Please do evaluate the questions from the OnDeck site and, you know, send us any questions, concerns, ideas that you have about what could be improved there. And then also think about the leveling criteria that Al presented, and if you have anything significant to propose about that, because I think we want to be keeping all these balls in the air simultaneously, so we are evolving our thinking. The last one, I think, and this was what Viet raised in the public comment, was the how ONC is evaluating the comments they receive. And ONC has been really clear, you know, that they get emails, they get, you know, comments at meetings, they get all kinds of things, including from your task force co-chairs. And they say, that's all well and good, but unless it's submitted, you know, as a public comment on the website, we really can't take this into consideration. So I think that there are really, my understanding is there's only two channels. There's what does HITACH recommend, and there's what is submitted by the public through the website. But maybe, Al, you could talk a little bit about the process of watching and evaluating the public website comments. I mean, I've been making a point of trying to read some of those, but, you know, there's no way to get ticklers about them or a daily email that says, you know, these are the three comments that were submitted, you know, at least as a member of the public. I assume you guys have a process on the ONC side to know, oh, there's three new comments this week and we have to go in and read them and evaluate them and maybe reach out to the person to get more clarification. Can you just talk about the process of how you guys receive and process public comments?
Sorry, Stephen, I came in on half of the last half of the question. I just got I got kicked out of the call, so
I understand. So the question of the really that Viet raised earlier is how are you evaluating the public comments, and then how are you going to take those into consideration in the broader context of the HITACH recommendations or any other input that you're getting when you go to make the determination of what's going to be included in the next version?
Sure. We're looking at, first of all, we look at every comment. Sometimes we look at it as a part of a greater whole. So, for example, the Gravity Project submission on SDOH had a number of comments from, I think it's up to 30 now, individual comments and comment letters on the SDOH submissions. And we look at that's significantly more than just a single person submitting a comment. And so we weigh both the volume and the nature of the comments on any particular topic, where the comments point to something that we did as far as prioritization of a particular data element or data elements, or where the comments on the our evaluation of the level that we assign. Those things are taken, you know, very seriously, and we've gotten some comments that said this should be a level two, or what do I need to do to get it to level two if it's a level one or a comment. And so we are in some cases responding to those individually, and in some cases we're responding to them as a larger sort of as a larger group, we're grouping them because sometimes the volume is so high on these. We may not respond individually to each comment, especially if it's on the same topic. So we're looking at all of those comments those comments are informing our own internal work as far as how do we are we correctly assigning these things to these prioritization criteria? And so that's in general how we're doing it. Those comments are there forever, although there's a filter on the website that makes them drop from view, but they will continue to be there and will continue to inform decisions about that particular data element or data elements for as long as they're, you know, under consideration.
Al, I really appreciate your remarks regarding comments about the leveling. My understanding is that the leveling, you know, once it's done for a given cycle, it's done. That there's, my understanding is that there's zero chance that something that you called a level one is going to be pulled all the way forward into version two this time around. Is that accurate?
I don't think it is. I wouldn't say no chance. I think that depends on. I wouldn't say no because if we can through continued communication with the submitter, if the submitter has, and we have gotten significant feedback from some submitters on whether or not a data element ought to be a level two or a level one, there is the possibility of ongoing work to further promote it in cycle. So it is possible for sure.
Well, I appreciate that response. It also kind of disappoints me because I think we, as co-chairs of this task force, have been really strict saying that we could not discuss things that were not in level two as part of our, you know, task 1C. But that it is what it is. I don't think, you know, this is the time to quibble about that, but it's good to know the approach.
I also think it's a great, so Al, what you're also stating is if people are in the public comment and they're amplifying existing submissions or adding submissions, they can also comment on the leveling definitions and in themselves. So that's an important clarification as we consider the next work, and encourage people to make comments about leveling and not just about inclusion. And that's back to my original comment of perhaps our first bit of work is to validate the leveling as it is before we start to work on the next version.
So again, the leveling is part of task 2B, which of course is different than the prioritization.
And Clem has a comment too, Stephen.
Yeah,
Clem.
This is, Steve, you'll have to forgive me for this, but it's bringing back your nemesis, tonometry. And I just learned that in terms of level one versus level two, it is being used now in a national database for quality used by the Ophthalmology Association. 100,000 a year are being sent with right and left tonometry with their appropriate codes. And I would like to insert that somewhere in, maybe it's a comment, to see if we could change that level. I apologize, Steve. You are a very good chair.
No. No apologies necessary, Clem. I'm just doing what I've been told. You know, I take my tasks seriously. I think this is sort of news to me, and to all of us. I think that again, I don't think it will change what we recommend to HITECH in 2 days. I don't think we have time to do that in a thoughtful manner. You certainly, as a HITECH member, will have an opportunity to comment on this on Thursday. And
you know, and who knows, maybe even propose that we the HITECH accept the task force's recommendations with the addition of tonometry, because I know that's something you've given a lot of thought to.
Well, we all have eyes, you know.
So. I only have eyes for you, Clem.
God, I knew you were going to do that.
You got to keep songs out of your head.
Yeah, you started it. Okay, Al.
With eyes as in yes. A-I-E-Y-E-S.
I love it.
Anything that says, of course, we all.
Al, can you also sort of, since you're bringing me surprises today, give me one more. I made a comment earlier that only websites and HITECH recommendations will be seriously considered. But I do know, and I know that you've had a lot of public and private meetings with stakeholders and people who have opinions about how this is going. Can you say a little bit about how you are actually going to be incorporating that sort of input?
Well, so going back to the first thing that you said, I'm not sure if I heard you right, or if I did, what you said wasn't correct. We are going to consider both public input, individual input on individual data elements from the submitters, and any public comment on those submissions as well, plus the HITECH, plus the public comment. You know, a lot of the public comment was made on the general USCDI page. So we take all of those things into consideration.
That's a really good point, separating out sort of additional information you get from submitters. Now, as a submitter, I'll note that, you know, you can't go back and edit your submission. You can put comments on your own submission. But as far as I know, once the submission is finalized and you click send, the submission itself is static. Is that accurate, Al?
No, there's room. There's a chance to edit it. Sometimes we ask for it because we see something missing, and you've experienced that, Stephen, with the submission that we needed some clarification on, and ended up making a change to the draft B2. You can change it. We can change it. Sometimes we've gotten certain cases where two different submissions on a similar or the same data element, but expressing a different use case. Those use cases were combined, and the data from each submission were added to one. But if somebody else, either the original submitter or someone else, comes along with additional information, like say, maybe they didn't represent a particular implementation guide, or they have a large scale pilot, or they may not be aware that something is in use in production environments. And a submitter could come along, a commenter could come along and say, well, what about this, you know, this reference implementation, or what about this existing use in this setting? We can edit them, and especially those kinds of edits can change the level quite significantly.
Got it. Good. All right, Al, did you have anything else on either the submission questions, leveling criteria, prioritization criteria, or comment evaluation process?
I wanted to mention, I was going to type it, but I'll just say it out loud. Yes, question about how do we weigh submissions depending on who it is that's submitting, whether it's DaVinci submits it, do we get that more weight or less weight compared to individual entities or individuals, just individual persons sort of off the street, if you will. We definitely look at the significance of the organization with respect to that data element. And so we certainly recognize the authority and expertise of organizations, you know, whether it's HL7 or Blue Cross Blue Shield or DaVinci Project. We recognize the significance of that, those opinions and comments. So we do take
And Al, this is Leslie, and I think one of the reasons we'd like to get HITECH to help us with that stakeholder prioritization is because there is no natural sponsor for patients. There are advocates, but there's not the gravitas necessarily behind an individual, yet that individual's comments might be from someone who's quite data underserved and impacting their health and care. So as we get direction from HITECH about the stakeholders, then I would assume that's going to influence this this review as well, because ONC then would have the recommendations from HITECH behind them of how to prioritize stakeholder comments. Would that be true?
I don't want you to think or anyone else to think that we, because I'll accept your premise that there's no natural major advocate for patient concerns. There's several significant ones out there, but compared to others, I think you might be right. But we don't discount an individual comment, although getting support from the HITECH or support from the Gravity Project or support from any other organization certainly helps raise awareness of a comment or a need that we certainly would take into consideration. So it is a little bit up to the individual submitter to do whatever needs to be done to raise the profile of the submission or the concept.
I'll add to that. As a member of the earlier USCDI task force, I met with the ONC team a number of times, and we talked about, how they were going to build this process. And one of the real guiding principles that we had at the time that Terry O'Malley was a staunch advocate for was the idea that anyone could make a submission, that you didn't need to be an SDO or a government agency or a big, wealthy health system, that anybody had the opportunity to submit and to advocate. And that the idea was that, getting something on as a comment level was a big deal, because then it got it into the daylight. And it gave other people a chance to comment and to support it, either between cycles or, as we just heard, even within a cycle. So I think that's important to appreciate that, the data underserved, whoever they may be, whether it's, acupuncturists or, home caregivers or, people working in the prison system. I mean, anybody has the opportunity to submit data elements and then try to stir up support for them. So I want to, there's a document that we're displaying now that I literally just sort of put together. As I was thinking about how we're going to approach this next phase of our work, I thought that there were some key questions that we should be asking ourselves as we head towards what we said was a goal, which is putting together some guiding principles. Some of these we've given a lot of, airtime to. What should be the role of USCDI, in ONC's toolkit, in the industry at large? Should USCDI be driving or following the establishment of industry standards? I don't think we have a really clear answer to that yet. What does it mean for a data class or element to be considered core? We've talked about that, and I think that we, if there are more thoughts on that, we should consider those in our upcoming discussions. And then should the identified needs of some constituencies be sought out and or prioritized over others? And we've talked about patients, individuals. We've spent a lot of time thinking about CMS's needs, but I think we're going to, hear from Viet shortly about, other payers and what they see as important. Public health clearly has been a key question. I know CDC put a lot of thought into making some submissions, some of which we've considered. HIT developers, of course, have you know, a clear stake in this. And then there's a whole bunch of clinical domains that where we know that folks have thought about what do they need to support their work, be it the transplant community, the cancer community. I'm not going to read the whole list, but there's a lot of folks out there that have not really had their specific needs addressed, and you know, and may be important as we look forward to future cycles of development. The additional care settings. I think this is again a short list of folks who really have not had, you know, their needs addressed specifically by nationwide interoperability efforts. You know, and then as we've said, there are these questions about the principles, and I think we've talked through a lot of these. And then the methodology, you know, should we, and Leslie, I think maybe this will be a good chance for you to raise your earlier thought about surveys. You know, should we be surveying specific constituencies to see what they feel that they need? Should we be inviting specific constituencies to come and speak to us? I mean, I personally would love to hear from CDC, you know, and what they're thinking, but, you know, but it's not up to me. It's up to all of you as the task force. And then, you know, with regard to input from HITECH, we're obviously going to get an earful on Thursday, including about an eyeful about tonometry. So these are just some thoughts I wanted to throw out to the task force to kind of get our juices flowing as we think about how we're going to approach phase two of our work. And I must say, I don't have a fixed idea of what that's going to look like. We're going to, you know, the co-chairs will work with the ONC team, and hopefully we'll have something a little bit more structured to bring back to you when we meet next week. But at this point, I think we're just kind of looking for big ideas and what people think about some of these questions. Leslie, do you want to talk about your survey idea?
Yeah, I was hoping that we could consider learning what kinds of requests are most often made, and my lens is always on the patient. So, for instance, when maybe it's ERIHA asking that group to say, query what kinds of requests are most often done in a patient portal. Maybe querying AHIMA to say what kinds of requests for record changes are most often requested from patients. That would help to identify what kind of information people seek to change informs access. And then selecting other stakeholders and asking what are the most requested items, or asking what items are most often misunderstood. So we were thinking of asking different constituency groups how data might inform us in our prioritization. Because in the genesis way back when of the Open API and the initial Blue Button project, which was the genesis of USCDI, we talked about how we could get information, what was known. For instance, I know at our health system, at least 40% of the time, the looks on the were all about labs and lab results, and that also led to requiring patient education. So there is causal effect or effect every time we select something. What does that mean? How do we change workflow? So being able to be informed about the volume of work by constituents would be helpful. So surveys could be great. I know that in past efforts, Mark spoke about the Meaningful Use Committee. I mean, some of the most meaningful testimonies we had were invited constituents that gave us information about what lacked most in interoperability for them to do their work, what lacked most in functionality and consistency for them to do their work. And that might be quite helpful to us as we go forward, inviting people in for a meeting to really to hear their narrative.
So Leslie, one of the things you just reiterated and you'd mentioned before was looking to EHRA to query their members to see if they have any data about volume of specific data access by patients through the portal. you know, whether patients are looking at their meds, their problems, their, you know, now their notes. So I think Sasha and Hans, you've been our sort of standby representatives from EHRA. Is that something that you think that EHRA could offer us in a reasonable period of time?
So I think we'd be happy to query our members. We've done surveys of EHRA in the past about sort of what knowledge EHR developers have about the interoperability usage of their products, and it varies. I think some of the things that Leslie expressed interest in would actually have to go to provider organizations to assess. They may not all be things that the developers themselves would have as information. So developers will in general tend to have more information about what types of standards are available or supported. And if we're really sort of looking at frequency of use, I think that tends to bleed over more into the provider space from the assessments we've done previously.
Hans, do you want to add to that?
Could a proxy be for that, Sasha, the request you get from clients to make changes of product?
I guess my gut sense is it probably wouldn't be a very effective proxy. I think we'd be better off asking a representative group of healthcare organizations for what they actually hear from patients.
Okay, thank you. And Hans has we'd love to hear your voice, and then Grace has a comment as well.
Yeah, I would agree with Sasha is that having a provider perspective on what are they hearing, what would they like to see in combination where we can get a sense of what kind of data is currently being being queried and asked for. So I think a combination of that, if we can work through what a survey may look like for both audiences, that might work. So certainly interest. We have seen in the past with trying to do some of those surveys that it's not always easy, but that has been a while ago. So it's certainly worth trying to do that again.
Thank you. Grace and then Jim. Oh, go ahead, Stephen.
We're probably not going to have time for both of them before public comments. So, Grace, why don't you take 30 seconds, and then we'll go to public comment.
Sure. Just from the patient and care partner perspective, I want to offer a different shade to this. In considering what patients look at, I want everyone also to consider the info that's needed to get the work done that they need to do to get the care they need. For example, what info does a patient need to make a new patient appointment or a second opinion appointment? What info is needed to appeal an insurance denial or participate in the peer-to-peer discussion? What info is needed to process a disability application? What info is needed to apply for a clinical trial? So these are pieces of information that may not necessarily be in the EHR as they stand right now, but they're very critical of information in order to move forward in a person's care.
That's a really great point, Grace. Thank you. So, Jim, hold that thought. Let's go to public comment.
Yes, operator, can we please open the line for comments?
Yes. If you would like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your line from the queue. And for participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up the handset before pressing the star keys. One moment while we poll for comments. There are no comments at this time.
What? Yeah, I thought you were going to comment.
Actually, we do have Viet Nguyen just queued in, and I will open up the line.
Thank you.
Please go ahead. Ms. Nguyen, your line is live. We're unable
we can
to hear
you.
Yet. Please check. Please check and see if you have your line muted on your end.
Yes, sorry.
There you go. Thank you.
I apologize for that.
thank you all for all the hard work you're doing. This was really great, and I apologize. I should have been participating much more frequently before, but thank you for the opportunity to provide some comments on behalf of the HL7 Da Vinci Project. For those who don't know me, I am Dr. Viet Nguyen. I am the technical director for the Da Vinci Project, and we submitted six submissions, and I just wanted to highlight three of them in the short amount of time. One is to not knowing where you've adjudicated all these, that we have some really strong support and from our members around the insurer information of the member patient, so identifiers such as the subscriber ID, member ID, plan information. We think that's really important in terms of improving patient matching and the use of deterministic approaches as opposed to probabilistic approaches. So we think that's going to be really important, and we recognize that some of these administrative standards weren't necessarily in the version one, and we hope to see them in the next version. Next would be the medication dispense as part of the medication class. It's important that providers know that patients not only received a prescription for a medication or an order, but that it was dispensed. At least we know they have the medication. Whether or not they take it is a separate issue, but that's an important aspect of trying to do patient management and population management. And then lastly, the one I want to reinforce is the a provider identifier. So we're in strong support of the NPI as well as DEA numbers to the extent they're being used by a subset of providers to help identify providers. So those are the three we felt fairly strongly about, but the others are more complicated. We submitted a request around provenance so that we could identify and use a set of profiles and extensions and value sets to identify where data comes from, since they're not always going to be in FHIR. They may be coming in version 2 or version 3, and that would be important for receivers of information. We made a request around medical record numbers. I know there's no particular standard, but that certainly will help with patient matching as well. And then finally, devices. And being able to support not only implantable devices, but codes for devices that are durable medical equipment or oxygen or other things that would help track the use of medical devices. So my time is up, and I want to respect that. So thank you again for the opportunity to comment, and we'll submit some comments in the on the site too. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jed. In fact, all of our time is up. So Jim, thank you. I hope you what you put in the public comments was what we're hoping to say, but because I think there were some great points that were just made there, looking at what data elements might be required in USCDI to support the transition of information blocking scope to all EHI. And I think that was a great point, and we can pick that up at our next meeting. But we are at time, and I want to respect everyone's time and thank you all for your participation. The co-chairs will furiously try to organize our thinking week, and we'll dive back into our task 2 and 3 or 3 and 2 work at that time. Have a great day.
Bye, everyone.